From NPR and Chicago Public Radio, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm Carl Castle, and here's your host at the Chase Auditorium in downtown Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Carl. Thank you so much. Thanks, everybody. Great show for you today. Ultimate fighting champion Chuck Liddell will be joining us later to take our quiz, teach us how to defend our lunch money at last. But first, in honor of Valentine's Day, this month's Real Simple magazine had a feature on secrets to a good marriage. In it, Amy Fisher of Long Island, New York, a different one, we hope, wrote in to say that the secret to her happy marriage is NPR. Quote, "My husband and I both listen to NPR. At the end of the day, when we are done talking about work, one of us will say, 'Hey, did you hear the piece about, you know, whatever? It's nice to have so much to discuss,'" unquote. She's absolutely right, of course. And we're glad that someone's talking finally about the stimulating effect of our programming, the way Terry Gross can make any room seem like a boudoir, the warm, velvety tones of our very own Dan Shore, known as the Barry White of news analysis. So if you can manage to keep your hands off each other and onto the phone while listening to us, give us a call, play our games. The number, 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. It's time to welcome our first listener contestant. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Andrew White from Portland, Maine. I have to tell you, I'm very excited to be on the same show with the Iceman.
Oh, yeah? Are you a fan of Mr. Liddell, the Iceman?
Oh, yes.
Wow. Well, it's interesting to find out how much, we're going to talk about this with him, but how much the Ultimate Fighting Championship and NPR demographic overlap.
Yes, it's an untapped demographic.
Yeah. Andrew, let me introduce you to our panel this week. First, say hello to a humorist, an author, and the man to blame for everything you might find at Baudet.com, Mr. Tom Baudet.
Hello, Andrew.
Hi, Tom. Nice to meet you.
Also say hello to one of the women behind the Washington Post's reliable source column, Ms. Roxanne Roberts.
Hi, Roxanne.
Hi, Andrew.
Also say hello to humorist and author, most recently of P.J. O'Rourke on The Wealth of Nations, unsurprisingly, Mr. P.J. O'Rourke.
Hi, Andrew. How you doing?
Good.
Well, Andrew, welcome to the show. You're going to play Who's Carl this time? Carl Castle right here is going to read you three quotes from the week's news. If you can correctly identify or explain two of them, you will win our prize. Carl Castle's voice in your home answering machine. You ready to play?
I'm ready.
All right, here is your first quote.
Do you recall any bleeding through your pants in 2001?
Now, Andrew, I want you to think before you answer, because, no, that was an actual question asked by Congressman Tom Davis at a hearing on Wednesday, who was asked about some unsightly stains on his pants while under oath.
That would be Roger Clemens.
Yes, Roger Clemens, the greatest pitcher who ever lived, registered trademark, took to Capitol Hill this week to defend what is left of his good name. Sitting right next to him was Brian McNamee, who told the House panel that he had injected Mr. Clemens with steroids, human growth hormone, through the rear, of course, leading to that alleged outbreak of unsightly bleeding. Still, Clemens denied everything, but he may have given himself away. At the end, he said he was tired from 4 hours of testimony, hard questioning. He said he needed a pick-me-up, and before he could stop himself, he reflexively turned his back on McNamee and dropped his trousers.
You know, Curt Schilling gets the bloody sock in the Hall of Fame.
I know.
Didn't they talk a lot about the MRI? Did I misunderstand this, that the MRI was his derriere?
Had to get, because he had a strange mass on his derriere.
Right, right.
This was discussed in the halls of Congress, the mass on Roger Clemens' derriere.
Look, it's more intelligent and less expensive than what they usually spend their time
on. Yeah, I know.
So, count yourself lucky. Yeah.
On the way out of the hearing room, of course, a small boy, tears in his eyes, came up to Clemens and said, "Say it ain't so, Roger." And Clemens, eyes downcast, threw a bat at him. All right, here is your next quote.
I'm skinny, but I'm tough. I'm wiry. Don't mess with me. Let them bring it on. Who they got? John McCain?
That was someone getting maybe a tick overconfident that he's going to be the Democratic nominee. Who?
Barack Obama?
In fact, yes. Senator Obama and Senator Clinton are practically tied in delegates, but with a bunch of recent primary victories, the Obama camp is starting to talk like he's unstoppable. They cite widespread approval of his policy platforms, which include calling for hope, renewal, change, perkiness, and a 50% increase in our gross national positivity. Critics say that his campaign is turning into a kind of cult, with his rallies seeming more like religious revival meetings. Supporters say that's ridiculous because religious revival meetings usually don't feature speeches by Jesus himself.
Well, I thought that was a pretty brilliant quote. The way he worded that, it sounded like a boxer trash talking before a fight. And if you look at the three leading candidates now, I mean, Obama's got the reach. I mean,
he's got those long arms.
Yeah.
It is a little weird that if you dare to say to an Obama supporter that you don't quite get it or you haven't made up your mind, they really do look at you as if you're just something wrong with you, that you don't grasp the enlightenment.
Yeah, I remember when they still allowed Moonies in the airports? It was like that.
Yeah, it's like that. Yeah. It's like every single one of the millions of people who support him is becoming more and more like Tom Cruise every day. And that's, I don't know if that's a good thing for the nation, is what I'm saying. They're all jumping on couches, metaphorically speaking. All right, very good. Here's your last quote.
They tried to make me go to rehab, and I said, no, no, no.
Well, that narrows it right down.
That was Carl, of course, recreating Amy Winehouse's big hit Rehab, which was the big winner this past week. Where?
At the Grammy Awards.
In fact, at the Grammys. Very good. Amy Winehouse had some immigration problems, some visa problems. She appeared on a satellite feed singing her paean to not going into drug and alcohol rehab. She was, of course, taking a break from her stint in drug and alcohol rehab. Big night for Winehouse and rehab. She took home 5 statues, including Record of the Year and Song of the Year and Irony of the Year. But I'm curious about that. Her big hit is, no, no, you want me to go to rehab. I'm not going to go to rehab. I'm fine. And she is so not fine. And she so needed to go to rehab. I mean, this is absolutely true and you know, good for her for doing it. But how can you continue to sing that song? I mean, am I applying too much of a standard of factual?
Yeah, I think you're.
Yeah, you're overthinking this.
I am. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She could run for president.
Yes.
She's got the chops.
Or apparently she could pitch for the New York Yankees.
Yeah,
that's also
no
problem. So, Carl, how did Andrew do in our quiz?
Andrew had 3 correct answers. Peter, Andrew, I'll be doing the message on your home answering machine.
Well done.
All right.
Right now, panel, time for you to answer some questions about this week's news. Tom, Britain's new Prime Minister Gordon Brown recently told the BBC that his government's approach to education and employment lies in unlocking the talent of the average British citizen. He said his idea was inspired by what?
American Idol.
Exactly right.
Oh.
Reality TV, more specifically.
I was just going for the laugh.
I know, and yet, not only that, but another show called Britain's Got Talent, which is related to it. Prime ministers are people, too. They watch the same silly TV shows we watch. But perhaps what's surprising here is that Gordon Brown admitted that reality TV was influencing his actual policies. He said, quote, "These shows are saying to people, look, if you've got a talent, you don't have to know someone. You can just apply, and we'll have a look at what you're like." So among the first reality TV-inspired initiatives, he's starting a new policy based on the show Wife Swap, where the prime minister will trade spouses with French President Nicolas Sarkozy. Roxanne, interesting news from the Israeli Air Force. A general there says he wants to help his pilots increase their on-the-job performance by giving them what?
Starbucks.
No.
Brian McNamee.
Yes, he's done it. That's true. He's a very successful trainer. I like that.
They're on-the-job performance by giving them... Is this something biological?
It is something medical, yeah.
erectile dysfunction corrective stuff.
Exactly right. And that's what they're giving to the pilots. They're giving them actually the same chemical that's the main ingredient, Cialis. Cialis is the answer. You may remember that that drug, you know, and Viagra, all those drugs, they work by increasing blood flow to the necessary parts, which is useful as well, apparently, for keeping your blood flowing in thin atmosphere, like up in the sky. Supposedly, taking Cialis before flights will help the Israeli pilots perform better while tangling with the enemy, making daring raids on their vulnerable areas.
And nothing kills that love and feeling like 8 Gs. You know?
I know, it's true. The biggest problem, of course, with giving Cialis to the pilots is that it makes a sudden ejection from the cockpit potentially quite dangerous. And of course, any combat sorties that last more than 4 hours require a doctor's attention. Thank you, everybody. Right now, it's time for the Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me Bluff the Listener game. Call 1-888-WAIT-WAIT to play our game on the air. Hi, you're on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hello.
Hi, who's this?
Robin. Hey, Marlo.
Hey, Robin, where are you calling from?
Northampton, Massachusetts.
Hey, how are things in Northampton?
Cold.
But still earthy, crunchy.
Yeah.
What do you do there?
I do body work on horses. I'm learning how to do body work on horses.
I'm sorry, you said body work on horses?
Yeah.
You mean like massage?
Well, kind of, yeah. It helps them keep their bodies okay, and the school horses. They're school horses, so they have lessons all the time, and they need a little help.
Wow, that's exciting. That's sort of a strangely rural job to be having these days. That's great.
Yeah.
How do you get them up on the massage table?
Oh, it takes a little talking. Right.
Barry White music.
Yeah, exactly. Robin, it's great to have you with us. You're going to play the game in which you must tell truth from fiction. Carl, what is Robin's topic?
Plastic surgery. It's fun for the whole family.
Has there ever been any area of technology with more innovations than the area of cosmetic enhancement? Liposuction, citrus, skin peels. The field has come up with more groundbreaking technology than NASA. This week we read about a cosmetic procedure that's being taken to another level. Our three panelists are going to tell you stories of cosmetic science going above and beyond, but only one of them is true. Choose that real story. You'll win Carl's voice on your home answering machine. Ready to play?
Yeah.
All right. First, let's hear from Tom Baudet.
Giving the old bag Botox injections for Valentine's Day was far more appropriate than it might sound. That is, if the old bag cost $7,000 and was once a crocodile. Italian label Zagliani's Botox-treated Red Croc accessories are the must-have handbag of the season. A former Milanese dermatology student developed the process to transform the desiccated skins of his crocodile creations into soft, supple leather. Exotic skins get very dry because they lose water, explained the designer. The new It bags, if not the Botox, have been spotted near such exotic hides as Madonna's and Jennifer Lopez. Inspired, perhaps, by the distinctive post-treatment facial contours of aging, painkiller-addled socialites, the Botox-treated bags are being marketed as the Puffy.
Your bag has Botox. Your next story of a cosmetic treatment gone a little wild comes from P.J. O'Rourke.
Everybody wants less fat in their diet these days, and what's fattier than pork? But hog farmers have had trouble breeding swine that are both lean and big enough to be profitable. Now the Ames Brothers Company of Beaufort, Iowa, America's third largest producer of pork products, thinks it has the answer, liposuction. But it's not for your looks. In fact, it's not for you at all. It's liposuction for pigs to remove unhealthy fat from pork before it's butchered. The process has a double upside, says Thomas Ames Jr., president of Ames Brothers. First, the pigs seem to be more self-confident, have more self-esteem after the liposuction. And second, we have an excellent market for the liposuction byproducts with several restaurant chains down south.
Pigs getting liposuction on a farm in Iowa, and your last story of stretching the envelope in the world of stretch marks, if you will, comes from Roxanne Roberts.
Just in time for spring break, the bee boob job.
Young women looking for cheap, bigger breasts are beelining to Miami, where plastic surgeon Joel Goreau has developed a $199 breast enhancement procedure using honeybee venom. Goreau got the idea 3 years ago when his wife was stung while sunbathing. Her left breast was swollen for about a week, and she cracked, "I wish it stung the other one, too." Goreau spent 2 years researching the enzyme in bee venom, apitoxin, and says a tiny dose injected into fatty tissues of the breast result in a natural, painless inflammation that adds at least one cup size and lasts 5 to 7 days. It creates a natural swelling with no surgery and no side effects, he told the Miami Herald. Well, my patients do get excited around fresh flowers.
All right, these are your choices. From Tom Baudet, a line of very expensive handbags that have been treated and supposedly improved with injections of Botox. From PJ O'Rourke, a story of how a bunch of farmers have decided that liposuction is good for the pig and good for the person who eats it. And lastly, a story of how bee venom can result in painless but temporary boob jobs. That's from Roxanne Roberts. Which of these was the real story in the week's news?
I think the pork would not be improved by liposuction.
You don't think?
No. I'm going to skip that, and the bee thing is just too horrible to contemplate. So
well,
I'm going to go with the Italian bags.
You're going to go with the Italian bags injected with Botox for your viewing pleasure. All right. Well, to bring you the correct answer, we actually spoke to a plastic surgeon to get his opinion about the real story.
I use Botox to inject the muscles in living humans. I think to inject purses is ridiculous. That... I'm not going to go home today and inject my sofa with Botox to have a more supple leather couch.
That was Dr. Brett Garber, a board-certified plastic surgeon in New Jersey, explaining why Botox won't necessarily work to make your purse more supple. Congratulations, you got it right. You earned a point for Tom.
Robin,
won our prize.
Robin, that was brilliant. I mean, because I thought that both my story and Roxanne sounded far more probable than Tom's.
Yeah. Italians, you know, I knew they wouldn't let me down.
Italians, yeah.
It's always the goofiest story, and it's always something from England, Germany, or Italy.
Thank God for the EU.
Yeah.
You've earned a point for Tom. You've won our prize. Carl Castle will record the greeting on your home answering machine. Well done. Thank you so much for playing with us.
Thank you.
Now the game where we ask people who have worked hard to succeed in one field questions about something else. It's a game of gotcha we call Not My Job. Chuck Liddell, also known as Iceman, is one of the stars of the sport that has been called the NASCAR of the 21st century, mixed martial arts. That's when two men go into the ring or octagon and do whatever they can to make sure only one of them is going to walk out. He was the light heavyweight champion of the Ultimate Fighting Championship for 2 years, and we are proud and a little scared to have him with us. Chuck Liddell, welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you for having
me. Well, it's a pleasure to have you. So anyway, Chuck, I'm not sure about the overlap between NPR and mixed martial arts. So can you start just by telling us what it is? What is mixed martial arts in the UFC?
All the striking arts, boxing and kickboxing, wrestling, and all the submission arts.
This is basically, this is a combat sport. You and your opponent get into a ring, an octagon, in the UFC, and you guys fight, real no-holds-barred fighting.
Yes, we get out there and go at it.
There's a lot of spectacle to it, I know. They're primarily pay-per-view television events, but this is not professional wrestling. This is for real.
So this is real fighting, for sure.
Now, how did you get involved? How did you find yourself being a professional fighter? Was it something you'd always...
I kind of fell into it. You know, I got lucky. I love fighting. So I love my job. So, but I was finishing college at Cal Poly, doing kickboxing while I was to kill some time, and then I got in the UFC, and the rest is history.
Now, you've written a book, a memoir, called My Fighting Life, and that's not an exaggeration. You say in the book that you really like to fight, but you sort of make a distinction between that and hurting people.
Well, yeah, I enjoy the competition of fighting, beating a guy, all that stuff, but I don't really enjoy hurting anybody.
Yeah, although that does happen, it seems.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm trying to hurt you when we're fighting. I'm hoping you're okay as soon as it's done.
Well, okay.
That's sweet.
That's my first marriage.
I've seen some of your fights on tape, and they're very intense. I mean, there's a tremendous amount of, intensity is a better word. Do you find yourself needing to get angry or emotionally involved in the fight?
I'm not an emotional fighter at all.
You're not an emotional fighter.
No. I think that clouds your judgment. It makes you. I'm a calculated fighter. I'm trying to set you up and hurt you. And I think getting mad just clouds your judgment.
Right. So you consider yourself friends with your colleagues whom you fight for a living.
Most of them, not all of them, but most of them.
Yeah. I noticed there's a rivalry you had with another very well-known fighter, Tito Ortiz. You didn't seem to be particularly fond of him, at least in your account.
Not really. I'm not particularly fond of him. More of it's what he does outside the ring. He's a good fighter in the ring, and I don't even mind the BS stuff he does to promote fights. But he's made a lot of comments outside about things that have nothing to do with fighting, and there's no reason to talk about.
Yeah, that made it a little easier to go in the ring with him?
It made it a lot easier to train for him.
Oh, I understand.
But when I go in the ring, it's all business.
So, I'm listening to you. You sound like a tough guy. You sound reasonable. You sound businesslike. You sound all those things. So what, do you have some, little secret thing about you that you want to share with us that doesn't, that we wouldn't think, do you love to knit, for example?
Yeah, the softer side of Iceman.
Is there some hobby or trait, or do you cry at certain movies?
I haven't cried at a movie. I like playing with my kids. That was my pastime. When I have free time, that's what I do.
Right.
I'm so busy doing PR and fighting and training and doing all that stuff. If I have any free time, me and my kids are playing. I climb on the jungle gym. Everyone laughs. I go to Chuck E. Cheese. I'm climbing up through I'll chase my kids through those little crawl spaces up there.
Do you get stuck?
I've never been stuck. It gets a little tight sometimes.
Yeah, I understand.
I'm a little big for those things. Yeah. I'm about 225, so.
Yeah. And there was that incident in Pomona when Chucky himself threw down on Chuck, and it wasn't a good thing.
So do you put on your game face when you play whack-a-mole?
I go after that thing. I hit that thing really hard.
He does it once. That whack-a-mole does not come back. I saw that there is, in fact, a pretty advanced video game of the UFC starring you. Have you ever sat and played yourself?
The old video game, yeah. I haven't got the new one yet. They got a new one coming out sometime this year, I think.
If I had a video game with me on it, I can't imagine what kind of video game this would be. But I would never leave the house. I was like...
Well, I suck at video games, so if I play me, then I'm going to lose.
All right.
My daughter beats me at Guitar Hero all the time.
Well, hey.
Guitar Hero, you played that?
No, I know what it is. I have played it once or twice.
Yeah, my daughter kills me.
She going
hard, I going easy, she still kills me.
That's not fair. Well, speaking of games, Chuck, you ready to play?
I'm ready.
All right, we've invited you here to play a game we're calling...
Oh, wow. That really explains a lot.
As we approach the end of the Bush administration, people will be thinking about the last 7 years and what happened. But an explanation for our president's particular character might be found further back in history, among his ancestors. That was what Jacob Weisberg thought. He's the author of the new book called The Bush Tragedy, and it provides some interesting tidbits about the president's forebears. We're going to ask you three questions about the relatives of the president of the United States. Get two right. You win our prize for one of our listeners, Carl's voice on the home answering machine.
Tell that poor listener, I'm sorry. But
all right.
Go ahead.
All right. Carl, who is Chuck Liddell playing for?
Chuck is playing for Chad Williamson of Charleston, West Virginia.
All right. You ready to
play? I apologize to him ahead of time, but go
all
ahead.
Right. There you go. I like your humble attitude. Here
much.
We go. So, this is your first question. The W in George W. Bush's name stands for Walker. That was the family of his paternal grandmother, and the Walkers were a strong influence in the Bush's fortunes. George Herbert Walker was the president's great-grandfather. He was known for being extremely strict with his children. One day, his son Lou showed up for a post-lunch tennis game at their estate, a little tipsy. What did George Walker, his father, do to punish him? Was it A, he immediately sent his son to work in a steel mill? B, he grabbed his son's tennis racket, snapped it over his knee, and told him to, quote, go play badminton with the other ladies? Or C, he fired his son's butler and forced Lou to dress himself for an entire month.
I like B. Just
you like B. Snapping the tennis racket. Go play badminton.
That'd be more fun for me. That's what I do.
Really? You play badminton? That's what you would do, or you play badminton?
No, I can't play badminton. I suck at both of those.
I just want to say, Chuck, and I'm saying this only because you're far away in the phone, I'd like to see you play badminton. I think that would be, that should be like a secret you can do in the video game. No, the answer actually was A. He sent him to work in a steel mill, told him that he was too, quote, stupid for college. He sent him to work in a steel mill the very next morning. Harsh. All right, next question. You have two more chances here. The president's paternal grandfather was more well-known. He was Prescott Bush, a U.S. senator from Connecticut. But his legacy as a senator was mixed. Among Prescott Bush's few real achievements as a legislator was which of these? A, he passed a law requiring golf caddies to be paid at the prevailing minimum wage rather than only through tips. B, a Senate rule that prevented members from waving to guests in the gallery. Or C, a Senate proclamation praising the art of a cappella men's choruses, an art form of which he was an ardent fan.
First one, I'll try that one.
So the first one was a law requiring golf caddies to be paid at the minimum wage.
Yeah, there you go.
No, I'm afraid it was the rule about waving from the galleries. Can't wave at people. He thought it was rude, and he did not... I don't think he would have done well at one of your matches if that was the case, no. He was a stickler about manners. One of his children said, quote, I never heard him fart, unquote.
Wait, he was against waving?
Yes, he thought it was...
farting.
But he thought he was against when senators turned and waved to their friends or supporters in the gallery. He thought that was not done, and so he passed a rule saying they couldn't do it. All right, you have one more question here. Let's see if we can get this one. We come now to President Bush's father, the first President Bush, President George Herbert Walker Bush. As is well known, the elder Bush was a distinguished Navy pilot, and like all pilots, he had a nickname. Think Maverick, or, if you will, Iceman. What was George Herbert Walker Bush's nickname in the Navy Air Corps? Was it A, Whiff and Poof, B, Mushmouth, or C, George Herbert Walker Bush?
The first two names are horrible.
Yeah, I know.
He didn't have one, so it was C.
You're going to go for C, George Herbert Walker Bush?
Yeah.
You're right. That was his nickname. These Navy guys thought it was hilarious that this guy was walking around introducing himself as George Herbert Walker Bush, so that became his nickname, his call sign. By the way, his nickname at Yale and among his family was and still is Poppy.
That's a long nickname.
Yeah, I know. It took time, particularly on combat missions. Carl, how did Chuck Liddell do in our show?
Well, Chuck needed two correct answers, Peter, but Chuck had just one correct answer, so no prize for Chad Williamson.
All right. Well.
Sorry about that.
That's all right. Well, you know. I mean, even you, I have to say, your record is extraordinary, but you do have a couple of losses, so you can handle this with grace, I'm sure.
Yeah, no problem.
All right. Yeah, I don't think it's...
Things I'm not good at, I'm not worried about.
Somehow I think he can shake this off, ladies and gentlemen. Chuck Liddell held the Ultimate Fight Championship's light heavyweight title for 2 years. He's one of that sport's biggest stars. You can pick up his new book, Iceman, My Fighting Life. It tells his story in and out of the octagon. Chuck Liddell, what a pleasure. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Just a minute. Carl finally goes back to work and doesn't know how he feels about that. It's Who's Carl This Time. If you'd like to play, give us a call at 1-888-WAIT-WAIT. That's 1-888-924-8924. Right now, panel, some more questions for you from the week's news. PJ, Valentine's Day was this past week, of course, and we have some news for people out there who are still looking for romance. New research shows that if you want happiness and love, you should look for dates who are what?
Farthest away from my wife and her gun.
I'm using kind of a metaphorical use,
oh,
PJ.
I see.
I'm not actually
not really
suggesting.
Me.
No.
It's not really me.
No, I get it. Okay.
No.
Yeah.
You look for the person with a whole bunch of money.
No. Even the metaphorical you is a Republican, and I appreciate that. No, I'll try to give you a hint. This will appeal to listeners of a certain age. Maybe you should go for Potsy, not the Fonz.
I'm older than that.
Really?
Yeah, I never watched that show.
Let me see if I can think of
something.
I
mean, that show was about me. It wasn't, I mean, no.
Yeah, that was your, that was sort of a sitcom version of your
I lived that. I didn't have to watch it.
Right.
How about Dobie Gillis instead of Maynard G.
There you go.
There you go. There you go. Thank you.
Look for the nerd, the nebbish.
Exactly. Oh, okay. The socially awkward one. That's what you should do.
Okay. Now I get it. Thank you, Tom.
My pleasure.
That was great. Fellow member of my generation.
You translate it further backwards. Think of the Miller's wife in Chaucer's Canterbury Tales rather than...
I'm not that old.
Okay. No, if you're looking for somebody to date, pick the person who's goofy and socially awkward, say the sociologist.
Because they are goofy and socially awkward.
Exactly. The sociologists are themselves trying to get dates.
They are.
I see. The
I see right through this one.
I think you should pick the person in the white lab jacket.
Yeah.
No, what?
What is it? The mouse.
Yeah.
Is this, on the theory, they're what, eager to please?
No, it's slightly more complicated than that. Let me explain. The guy or gal who seems to have it all, charm, wit, professionally whitened teeth.
It's taken already.
No. The idea... You don't have a chance with them. You're sitting at home reading sociology reports. Who are you kidding? No. The idea is that these person are, by definition, so good at adapting to social situations, seeming attractive and confident, that their real personality is hidden. It's a mystery. Scientists call these highly successful popular people self-monitors. And they're very appealing, superficially. But a new study says they themselves are not happy in relationships. They're not good at commitment. Because they avoid honest disclosure, you see. So the next time you're at a bar, some sort of pickup joint, and you see that studly guy with a posse of gals laughing at his every word, just move right past him and head straight to the dork with the cell phone holster playing bar trivia. I will be really happy to meet you. I'm very approachable. And my wife is unarmed, so. Roxanne, good news. Good news for you, Roxanne. It's now easier for scientists to track flying lemurs.
Well, that's a load off my mind.
They're using a device adapted from a common household game. What?
All right. They can track the flying lemurs.
Yes, and they're using an interesting... application of technology that is more commonly found...
In a household game.
Yeah, household
like
game.
Like a board game?
No, like a computer game.
Like a computer game.
Specific one that a lot of families are trying to get these days.
A lot of families are trying to get a computer. I don't know. Let's see. All right. I need a hint.
She thinks you're just having a good time. She's looking at you. She's going, what are they doing? The seats aren't moving.
Did they say we?
They did say that.
All right.
Yes, the Wii. Nintendo Wii. The controller. Flying lemurs who were waiting in line at Target for their Wiis are now in luck. Scientists are providing lemurs with their own Wii-like controllers in order to see how they jump from tree to tree in the forest. The controller sits in a tiny backpack on the lemur. Lemurs with backpacks. And it can measure acceleration and motion when they take off and land. That'll help scientists figure out how they glide and also how they keep getting strikes when they bowl. They're good at that. The lemurs say they're happily testing out the video game equipment as long as researchers decide not to test the accuracy of their old duck hunt guns.
See, I'll tell you what the problem here is that I'm actually kind of a Luddite, and we don't have a Wii system at home.
Really?
We're still at the PS2 stage.
Oh,
you know?
Wow.
I just got cable 2 years ago. Oh, I mean, you know.
You're falling behind the lemurs, you know. This is beyond Luddite. This is.
I know you're not like other folks, but for once, could we pretend, though? Let me be like other kids. Why can't I have Nintendo?
Coming up, it's lightning fill in the blank, but first it's time for Carl to recreate some more voices from the week's news. Hi, you're on Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Hi, this is Janice LaRue calling from Nevada City, California.
Nevada City, California.
Somebody's correct. Confused.
Yeah, I was about to say. Now, I have to say, whenever I say the name of that state in the air, I always say Nevada, and then people from Nevada call up, and they say, we hate you, they say. I mean, it's really gotten vitriolic because they don't say it right. So do you say Nevada or Nevada?
You know, we say Nevada, but we're far too relaxed to really care.
There you go.
Which is why they're over in California.
Exactly. Well, welcome to our show, Janice. Now, You're going to play Who's Carl this time. Carl Castle will once again read three quotes from this week's news. If you correctly identify or explain two of them, Carl will record the greeting on your home answering machine.
Yay!
Yay, she said.
She sounds so excited.
Carl Castle is just so hot.
Thank you, Janice.
Yeah, you are. All right, then. You ready to play? You're ready to play. I don't need to ask. Here's your first quote.
I liked feeling like a part of the team, carrying a sign. Now I'll just go back to walking in circles in my apartment.
That was an anonymous laborer commenting on his or her mixed feelings on going back to work after what strike ended?
Oh, the writer's strike.
Exactly right. Rest easy, fans of Lipstick Jungle. The Hollywood writer's strike is over. Writers agreed to come back to work after producers agreed to some of their demands. For example, it will no longer be acceptable for producers to mock the writer's wardrobe, posture, or unhealthy pallor. The writers going back to work means, among other things, that the Oscars will go on as scheduled and that people like Bill Maher and Jay Leno will once again be able to pretend that they are themselves funny. All right, here is your next quote.
Oh, he's just relaxing. This dog doesn't feel any stress. He's a beagle.
That was John Woodring, one of the owners of Uno, probably the most famous beagle on the planet right now, and the first beagle to ever do what?
He won the Westminster Abbey Dog Show?
He did. It's actually the Westminster Kennel, but yes. Westminster Kennel Club show. I think they should have dog shows at Westminster Abbey.
Wouldn't that be groovy?
It would be totally groovy. Until that time, they're having them at Madison Square Garden. They're sponsored by the Westminster Kennel Club. Over the history of this Nobel Prize of dog shows, the beagle has been passed up time and time again in favor of any number of terriers or Afghans, not to mention those foo-foo French poodles who, with their pom-pom hair and shaved rear ends.
It's not their fault.
It's not their fault?
Not their fault they wouldn't fight in Iraq. You can't tell me it wasn't their fault they wouldn't fight in Iraq.
What? What?
What? The poodles?
French poodles.
But the Afghans.
I was about to say, either I need more of your drugs or you need less of them, PJ. One of the two. Because that was like, whoa, what was that? It is true that they themselves do not shave themselves to look like tarted up topiary, so I guess we should be kinder to the poodles. Anyway, this year, Uno the Beagle left the poodles and Bichon Frises in the dust, yelping every time his name was called and winning the cover.
Baying, actually.
Baying?
I found out. I found out. The technical term for what he does, you know, is baying.
He bays.
He was the loudest winner ever. He was like, oh!
101 years.
Usually those dogs, they seem so regal and you know, those,
yeah,
those dog show
prim
dogs.
Prim and proper.
And every time I saw a picture of that Uno, he was jumping up on somebody's pant leg and barking and yelping like every dog I've ever known. It was kind of comforting
for dog's dog.
Normal dog owners. Yeah.
Well, speaking of dogs, here is your last quote.
Hey, you try wagging these puppies around a while and see if you don't have back problems.
That was a country music star talking about her puppies, sort of metaphorically referring to the two large mounds beneath her décolletage and how the back pain they caused forced her to cancel a tour. Who?
Dolly Parton.
In fact.
My favorite news tidbit of the week.
You knew that. You were on top of that story. You think it's easy being the most statuesque country singer in the world? Think again. We really don't have anything more to say about this. Except our condolences to Ms. Parton. Hope you're back on the road again. We would have finished up with something more important for you, Janice, but sadly Nancy Pelosi just never talks like that. So we've got to go with the news.
For good reason.
She could talk.
I know. Just got to go where the news leads us. Carl, how did Janice do in our quiz?
I'm happy to say that Janice had three correct answers, Peter. And Janice, I'll be very, very happy to do
particularly so.
What a team.
Well done, Janice. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye-bye now.
Bye-bye.
It's time to move on to our final game, Lightning Fill in the Blank. Each of our players will have 60 seconds in which to answer as many fill-in-the-blank questions as he or she can. Each correct answer now worth 2 points. Carl, Can you give us the scores?
Tom Beaudet has the lead, Peter. He has 4 points. We have a two-way tie for second place. Roxanne Roberts and P.J. O'Rourke each has 2 points.
All right. We have flipped a coin. P.J. has elected to go first, so here you go. The clock will start when I begin your first question. Fill in the blank. Yahoo CEO Jerry Yang sent a letter to shareholders urging them to reject blank's takeover bid.
Microsoft.
Right. The U.S. Justice Department arrested 4 people for stealing defense and aerospace secrets and selling them to blank.
China.
Right. Mitt Romney announced on Thursday that he would endorse blank for president.
McCain.
Right. Violinist David Garrett horrified the classical music world when he accidentally blanked his million-dollar 18th century violin.
Fell down and crushed.
Right. Singer Tom Jones denied a tabloid report that he has insured his blank for nearly $7 million.
Big sore rear end from human growth hormone injection.
No, his chest hair.
Ah.
It's not unusual. A new study shows that artificial sweeteners may actually make you blank.
Fat.
Yeah, gain weight. A German driver whose car fell into a ditch was hauled out in no time because the accident incurred in front of blank.
A blank. I've drawn a
blank.
Blank.
It is 10 bodybuilders. The bodybuilders were working out at the Explosives Fitness Studio in Bad Zwischenahn, when they saw the driver veer into a meadow and plunge into the ditch. A police spokesman said, quote, they dropped their sweat towels and water bottles and ran over to the road to the crash site. They then heaved the car out. It only took them a few minutes. The shaken driver thanked the men profusely, asked them to please put me down now. And then, this is true, he treated them all to a round of energy drinks at the fitness studio bar.
True.
Carl, how did PJ do on our quiz?
PJ had 5 correct answers for 10 more points. He now has 12 points, and PJ has the lead.
Well done, sir. All right. Roxanne, you're up next. Please fill in the blank. The senior commander of blank, wanted for the bombing of the U.S. Marine barracks in 1983, was killed in Damascus on Wednesday.
Hezbollah.
Right. U.S. officials announced that the Pentagon is planning to shoot down a broken blank expected to hit the Earth in March.
Satellite.
Right. The CDC announced that toxic levels of formaldehyde fumes make FEMA-issued blanks dangerous for hurricane victims in the Gulf Coast.
Trailers.
Right. Taking a break from the campaign trail, blank flew to the Cayman Islands to deliver a paid speech.
Huckabee.
Right. A Polish man who pasted a notice on a bus stop asking vandals to stop destroying the bus stop was arrested for blank.
Littering, defacing.
Right, vandalism.
Yeah.
Monday's devastating 3-hour email outage for blank users has been blamed on a routine upgrade.
Blackberries.
Right, beating out former presidents Jimmy Carter and Bill Clinton, blank won a Grammy for the audio version of his book, The Audacity of Hope.
Barack Obama.
Right, thanks to a new advertising technology, magazines will soon contain ads that you can blank.
Lick.
Yes.
Oh. Yeah. That's the last Newsweek I pick up at the doctor's office.
Exactly. Yeah. Who among us hasn't come across a glossy ad in Sports Illustrated at the doctor's office?
In the swimsuit
issue. And not given in to our natural inclination to lick it. Come away disappointed. Well, no more. Using technology from Interpublic Group, Welch's Grape Juice is taking out full-page ads in People magazine with liftable strips that say, for a tasty fact, remove and lick. Big problem, most people draw the line at licking magazines. They don't know. Mean Vice President of Initiative Greg Castro-Nuevo admitted, I had a little bit of aversion to it. It's a little unsanitary, perhaps. On the other hand, it's hard to forget whose brand you're licking. Carl, how did Roxanne do in our quiz?
Roxanne had a great round, Peter. 8 correct answers, 16 Ooh. More
whoa,
points.
Whoa, whoa, whoa!
18 points, dominant. And Roxanne has taken the lead.
So how many does Tom need to win?
A 7 to tie, 8 to win.
Oh, my gosh. Here we go. Tom, this is for the game. Fill in the blank. The Senate Ethics Committee said that blank acted improperly after his arrest in a Minneapolis airport bathroom.
Larry Craig.
Yeah, you think? House GOP members walked out of the chamber as Democrats voted to hold in contempt 2 aides to blank.
President Bush.
That's right. The Pentagon announced that it would seek the death penalty against 6 Guantanamo detainees charged with the blank attacks.
The 9/11 attacks.
Right. The Prime Minister of Australia extended a national apology to blanks for decades of mistreatment.
The Aborigines.
Right. A Washington State woman was charged for drug possession after she accidentally blanked.
It walked into a police station.
No. After she accidentally deposited her meth in an ATM.
Oh.
Wrong envelope. Best known for his roles in Jaws and All That Jazz, actor blank died at age 75.
Roy Scheider.
Yeah, we're going to need a bigger boat. Residents of Frankenmuth, Michigan are being warned that quick bursts of water may erupt out of blank.
Tom, it's got to be toilets. That's the stage of the show.
Well, this is like a German question, because Frankenmuth, Michigan is basically Germany. Shoot out of the the lederhosen.
No. No. Of course it's toilets. What?
Well, no.
Maintenance of city sewer lines usually just causes minor gurgling, but in 20 households, the maintenance has turned bathrooms into little versions of Old Faithful. The city has taken out newspaper ads, posted notices on residents' doors, get up, to warn them about the quick blast of water. But the city manager explained, it's not a real big problem. It's just real strange. So, Carl, did Tom do well enough to win?
He needed at least 7 correct answers for a tie, but Tom had just 5 correct answers. So with 18 points, Roxanne Roberts is this week's champion.
She's hot.
Whoa.
Ice woman. Yeah.
With a knockout, I think.
Yeah. Now she cares about us now, though. That the
yeah, the match is over.
Hopes
yeah,
I'm not
friends
hurt.
Again.
Right.
Yeah. While she's in the octagon, that is this show, though.
Yeah. I'm all business.
Oh, yeah. In just a minute, we're going to ask our panelists to predict how the Barack Obama freight train will be derailed, how that bubble will be burst. But first, let me tell you that support for NPR comes from NPR stations and Angie's List, providing firsthand homeowner reviews on local contractors like plumbers, painters, and movers. Details at angieslist.com. Lumber Liquidators, hardwood, bamboo, and cork flooring. Catalog at 1-800-FLOORING. The members of the National Association of Realtors, working on behalf of America's residential and commercial property owners. On the web at realtor.com. Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is a production of NPR and Chicago Public Radio in association with Urgent Haircut Productions. Doug Berman, executive producer. B.J. Lederman composed our theme. Our program is directed by Melody Kramer, produced by Mike Danforth and Emily Ecton. The senior producer of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me is Rod Abid. Now, panel, what will happen to Barack Obama's campaign to bring him back down to earth with the rest of us mortals? Roxanne Roberts.
4 words. Monica Lewinsky's little sister.
P.J. O'Rourke.
Well, Hillary's made the women mad at the blacks and blacks mad at Hispanics, so I figure if Obama can make the gays mad at the Jews, it's a quintella for us Republicans.
And Tom Baudet.
He will march proudly to the podium at the nominating convention, salute, and announce he is reporting for duty.
If any of those things happen to Barack Obama's campaign panel, we'll ask you about it on Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Thank you so much, Carl Castle. Thanks also to P.J. O'Rourke, Tom Baudet, and Roxanne Roberts. Thanks to all of you for listening. I am Peter Sagal, and we will see you next week. This is NPR, National Public Radio.